From Tralee to the Blaskets, from Lixnaw to Kilgarvan, your voice in the kingdom, Radio Kerry.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 16 of The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, recalls the events of 1946. Goals win games, and so it proved for Kerry in 46. Goals also save matches, and they did so for the Kingdom in one of the most famous finishes to an All-Ireland final. Throughout this programme, we'll reproduce excerpts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you'll hear every time.
Part 1.
Heading into 1946, the Sam Maguire was resting in Cork. 5 years had passed since Kerry's last All-Ireland victory. In 1944, the Kingdom had lost the decider to Roscommon. 1946 would offer Kerry the chance to atone for that defeat, producing a sensational ending to the All-Ireland final. Reigning champions Cork were the first hurdle for Kerry in 1946. Cork had defeated Kerry in the 45 Munster final, 111-16. Future Kerry captain Donie Sullivan feels the rivalry with Cork really took off in these years.
The first year was probably around 44 or 45 that Cork became the great rivals to Kerry in Munster. And Cork beat Kerry in 45. So I think from then on down to the present day, if you're playing Cork, Kerry are playing Cork, you can never be sure. You're always waiting for Cork. They're going to rise their game and beat you again. And it has happened, I think, if you hang around long enough, any player that is going playing Cork against Cork sometime, favourites to win, and Cork will come out and win by 7 or 8 points.
A fortnight before the Kerry versus Cork 46 encounter, Kerry had taken on Tipperary in a challenge match in the hope of fine-tuning the side ahead of that Cork match. Legendary GAA writer Paddy Foley, in his column in the Kerryman, stated his belief that the meeting with Tip had taught Kerry nothing. Paddy Foley, better known as PF, also reflected sorrowfully how
last year Cork went on to win All-Ireland honours and will now be represented by practically the same side. It was unfortunate for the Kerrymen. Passing through a lean period, they should be drawn against the champions in the first round. This year, the Kingdom are confronted with an unprecedented situation. They face their most serious test at the start.
In the wake of the previous season's setback against Cork, changes were made for the 46 campaign.
With the object of getting the players into shape, Kerry started the championship this year much earlier than usual. A changed Kerry team was expected. It may be criticised, but the selectors had a tough job and they picked the players on current form rather than past reputations, rightly so. Many familiar faces are missing. It is an experimental team, but one capable of rising to great heights. There is no passenger, unlike last year, when lack of training and injuries weakened the side and threw it out of gear. Let it not be imagined that the Fitzgerald Stadium is an advantage to the home team. Kerry plays so rarely there that Cork know the ground just as well. Its wide open spaces were an advantage to the young, enthusiastic Cork side last year. Kerry's veterans were beaten for stamina and speed.
Of the side which lost to Cork in 45, only Dan O'Keefe, Paddy Kennedy, Denny Lyne, Jackie Lyne, Bat Garvey, Tom Gega O'Connor and Eddie Walsh started this time out. Dan O'Keefe, Paddy Kennedy, Tom Gega O'Connor and Eddie Walsh were all members of the three-in-a-row winning side of 1939-41. Another man involved in that three-in-a-row success, Bill Casey, returned against Cork, having missed the 1945 campaign. The other seven to start against Cork were Nicholas O'Donoghue from Mitchell's, Paddy Bourne Brosnan of Dingle, Dick Fitzgerald's trio, Gerald Tehan, Teddy O'Connor and Paddy Burke, Shannon Rangers' man, Eddie Dowling, and Jack Falvey of Rahalies. 15,000 people turned up at the Fitzgerald Stadium, Killarney, for Kerry versus Cork, a match which was
an exhilarating game, played at a sizzling pace that grew hotter as the minutes fled. This game will go into the annals as an encounter never to be forgotten. It was simply terrific, overflowing with thrills, brimful of heartthrobs, and as dashing as a mountain torrent. The champions were taken from their throne, but had to be dragged every inch of the way. And it was not until the last second of a titanic battle that the monarchs had fallen.
The laurels were to be Kerry's, but what a battle they had. When the game opened,
Cork were definitely the masters at the outset. The champions had a few wides before Murray raised the first flag after 4 minutes. Dan O'Keefe brought off a great save before a passing movement in the 12th minute between Paddy Kennedy, Bat Garvey and Jack Falvey ended in the latter equalising. The Kerry goal had a few narrow escapes before Beckett gave Cork the lead with a point from a free on 16 minutes. 2 minutes later, Jackie Lyne went high for a centre by Tom Gaga O'Connor to score the equaliser. In the 21st minute, O'Connor gave Kerry the lead with a lovely kick from the corner. Paddy Burke, going through for a score, was pulled down and Gaga pointed the free after 23 minutes. 5 minutes later, Burke stretched Kerry's lead with a point and just on half-time, Beckett had a point for Cork from a free.
Kerry only led by two at the break, 5 points to three. The early minutes of the second half saw the Kingdom explode into action.
Cork will long remember and goalkeeper O'Driscoll will never forget the nasty trick fickle Fortune played on them in the first minute of the second period. A centre by Tom O'Connor was badly muddled by three Cork defenders and the ball bounced slowly off one of them to roll slowly into the downstretched hands of O'Driscoll. Into his hands it rolled, but to the consternation of everybody present, he failed to hold it and it trickled between his legs for one of the softest goals ever scored against a team.
Kerry sought to capitalise on their good fortune.
Jackie Lyne then crashed the ball against the crossbar with an unstoppable shot. Then a long ball from Tom O'Connor landed in the goal mouth and went off a back's hands over the bar. It looked curtains for Cork.
Kerry were now 6 points up, but there was a sting in the tail.
Crowley drove a low kick up the centre. Young dribbled away and left with Cronin. Cronin sent in a low shot and a Kerry half ran across to intercept. The ball hit his hand and was deflected wide of O'Keefe to the net. Cronin followed with a point. With the margin narrowed to 2 points, it looked as if Cork would pull the game out of the fire. But they had shot their bolt and Kerry finished on top. A point apiece by Bat Garvey and Paddy Burke. Just before the whistle, Teddy Connor landed a 50 in the goal mouth, the ball going over the bar off a back's hands.
A 1-8-1-4 victory had dethroned the Munster and All-Ireland champions. Plaudits were being thrown around like confetti.
Kerry's display came as a revelation to their followers. Apart from their aerial superiority, Kerry were better in field craft. Special mention of Bill Casey, Teddy Connor, Gaga Connor, Bath Garvey and Dan O'Keefe. The latter gave one of his best displays ever. One particular clearance in the first quarter being exceptionally brilliant. Teddy Connor at centre field was here and there and everywhere, and the manner in which he bottled up Young was a revelation. The crowd was easily the largest ever for a Munster Football Championship game. Had trains and buses run, the attendance would have been enormous.
As outstanding as this victory was, Kerry had only progressed to the Munster semi-final with the win. However, with Cork out of the way, the remainder of the provincial campaign was viewed as a formality. In the 5 weeks between the win over Cork and the Munster semi-final with Clare, PF reported in the Kerryman newspaper how he had heard inquiries about ghost trains for the All-Ireland. A case maybe of people getting ahead of themselves, for it was rightly pointed out in regard to the Cork victory that
reputations were in some case made in Killarney, but they were not established for the year.
Following the result and display against Cork, it would not be easy to keep people's feet on the ground. A timely reminder of Kerry's fortuitous victory over Limerick the previous season was offered up ahead of the meeting with Clare.
What of Clare? Well, they beat Limerick. Last year, Kerry faced defeat at Limerick. It was only in the last 2 minutes that they survived. Our main concern is that Clare beat them, and now we've got to meet and beat Clare. That can be done, but let the 15 line out with the attitude that they lined out against Cork. Then it will be in the bag.
Kerry made 4 changes for the Clare match. Paddy Bourne-Brosnan, Nicholas O'Donoghue, Eddie Dowling and Tom Gaga O'Connor were all missing. In came defenders Bill Myers of Dick Fitzgerald's, E. Coughlin from Evera and Castle Island's Charlie O'Connor, plus attacker John Mitchell's man Bill Bruddy O'Donnell. Gerald Tehan moved out to midfield to partner Teddy O'Connor. The old saying of after the Lord Mayor's show comes the dung cart was very much in evidence in Ennis on the day Clare entertained Kerry. The Kingdom, with confidence sky high after the defeat of Cork, were most fortunate to emerge intact. The opening half against Clare left the Kingdom shell-shocked.
Clare had a wide just from the throw-in. O'Shea opened the tally with a point. Jack Falvey, receiving from Teddy O'Connor, solo ran his way through and crashed off the post. Paddy Burke secured to point. Then came a Clare spell in which points came from Daly and Carroll. Clare fouled. Bill Bruddy O'Donnell pointed, but there was no stopping Clare at this stage and Daly added another point. Bill Bruddy O'Donnell gathered the ball, raced through the defence and shot across the corner of the square to the fast-running Jackie Lyne, who just failed. Murphy added 2 points for Clare.
A 5-point deficit faced Kerry heading into the second period. Still, the supporters were only waiting for the Kingdom to kick into gear. It was a long wait.
Kerry followers expected a right of scoring on the turnover, but it did not turn out that way. The minutes sped by with useless bunching and ill-planned movements which brought no score, nor did any seem likely. Eventually, after 16 minutes, and after Kerry had been disallowed a goal, Paddy Burke opened with a point. Still, there was a 4-point deficit and less than 10 minutes of play. Then came the long-awaited goal. A Clare rush was cleared. The ball travelled down into the Clare square. Gerald Tehan, who had moved into the forward lines, bottled up the back. Paddy Burke gripped the break, parted to Jackie Lyne, who crashed under the bar. The Kerry half line of forwards, Jack Falvey, Bill Brody O'Donnell and Garvey, were always trying, and the first named made a nice run to send over the levelling point. E. Coughlin's clearance reached Paddy Burke, who pointed. Jackie Lyne added another to finish the scoring.
The most narrow of escapes for Kerry, 1-6 to 7 points, the final score in favour of the Kingdom. The relief was evident.
With time ebbing past and defeat an all too ugly possibility, each of the few Kerry followers at Cusick Park looked around for some hole to creep quietly into and forget. At the end of the game, we were a weak, pallid and nerve-shaken lot. We won on the post, but once more, our ego was badly shattered.
The players felt the brunt of the criticism.
The team the selectors chose to meet Clare was a good one. Unfortunately, some of the players decided to be bad, and at times were almost indescribably so. The moving of Tehan to centre field was revolutionary. The blame for Kerry's narrow squeak must lie with the forwards. Paddy Burke decided that breaking through on his own would pay greater dividends than clever distributions. He is a fine full forward and well able to throw any back off his game. But he should remember the real success in his position is to keep the other forwards well supplied. It was the disorganisation hereabouts that almost led to our undoing. This Clare lesson might be the very one that will see us through to All-Ireland Day.
2 weeks after Downing Clare came the Munster final. When the team to face Waterford was revealed, the focus was on the conundrum that was the Kerry fullback slot.
One sweet, gorgeous headache. Yes, that is how the Kerry fullback problem has developed. This latest experiment by the selectors is the third since we started the ball rolling in 1946. Ever since the selectors began to entertain doubts about Joe Cohan's ability, the fullback crux has loomed big in county football talk. McElligott is facing a stiff task. They have tried Paddy Brosnan and Bill Myers. Each has been found wanting. In any case, it's getting a little too late for any more experiments.
Bill Casey's absence against Waterford meant changes. The versatile Gerald Tehan lined out at centre-back. Alongside him was Carlo Sullivan of Mitchell's. Bill Myers did not play, so Castle Island's Tom McElligott was the fullback. Eddie Dowling returned at midfield. Tom Gaga O'Connor was also back in. He and Dan Kavanagh were restored to the half-forward line. Victory was expected and delivered against Waterford in Tralee. From the beginning, the intentions of both sides were clear.
Whatever chance Waterford had of securing the honours was thrown away by their backs. Whenever their goal was threatened, the Waterford backs fouled. Thus, Kerry had 2 points in less than a minute. When Paddy Burke gripped down Gerald Tehan's centre, he was dragged down. Tom Gaga O'Connor pointed. Again, Kerry raced to the attack, and once more, Burke bit the dust. O'Connor kicked Kerry's second point. A mix-up in the Kerry defence let Waterford in for a goal. Fleming booting high. Dan O'Keefe fielded and gripped only to have the ball punched to the net by an incoming forward, Curran. This roused the Kerrymen, who had the better of the argument thereafter. Paddy Kennedy featured in a nice movement before Tom Gaga O'Connor pointed after Paddy Burke had been fouled. Gaga followed with 2 more points from Freeze before Kerry-born Jim Bailey rallied Waterford, who combined to break through for a point. Before the whistle, Gaga O'Connor again pointed for Kerry from a free.
Half-time came with Kerry ahead 6-1. The second half belonged to the Kingdom.
Kerry played as they wished, and a right of scores from Paddy Kennedy, Gaga O'Connor, Teddy O'Connor, Jack Falvey, Jackie Lyne, Dan Kavanagh and Paddy Burke clinched the issue. Almost on time, Bailey had a goal for Waterford from a 14 yards free.
The final score was 2-15-2-1 in Kerry's favour. The victory did not answer too many questions about Kerry's prospects for the remainder of the season. The focus instead was on two key areas of the pitch.
Tom McElligott, on trial at centre full, was confronted with a big occasion. His weakness was roaming, leaving Dan O'Keefe often unguarded. Our two midfield men, Eddie Dowling and Teddy O'Connor, good players as they are, do not play as a pair. In the early part of the year, the general opinion was that we had backs galore and no forwards. Now our problems are in defence and not attack.
The game against Waterford had been started by the Archbishop of Perth, Mundy Prindeville. Prindeville won an All-Ireland medal with Kerry in 1924. Antrim, still in search of their maiden beaten All-Ireland title had come through Ulster. This was to be just the second semi-final meeting of Kerry and Antrim. Back in 1912, Antrim defeated Kerry by 3-5 to 2 points. Antrim's progression to this stage of the competition came as a shock.
Cavan were fairly and squarely beaten by Antrim in the Ulster final. There was no suggestion of fluke about that win, as the Breffni men admit. There is great confidence in Ulster. It is hard to account for this unless it follows the example of the small boy whistling, passing a churchyard in the dark to keep up his courage. No team in Ireland can feel confident against Kerry in Croke Park. I expect Kerry to win. Defeat would be more than a surprise.
Kerry brought back Joe Cahan in a bid to solve the fullback quandary that persisted in 46. Future Kerry goalkeeper Johnny Foley remembers it as a smart move.
Cahan was outstanding that year when he made his comeback against Antrim. Kerry had tried three fullbacks up the semi-final, but Cahan was the best of the lot of them. Eventually they were selected then on Cahan and the Millennium team. They were a good pairing together.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
Cahan, coming in for Tom McKelligott, was one of four Kerry changes for the semi-final with Antrim. Bill Casey and Bill Brody O'Donnell returned at centre-back and half-forward respectively. Gus Cremin was to partner Eddie Dowling at midfield. Cremin's inclusion saw him make his first appearance of the season. Cremin also recalls getting special dispensation from the county board ahead of the semi-final.
I played in the junior and they drafted me into the seniors for the All-Ireland semi-final against Antrim. Kerry went into training for that semi-final. I was the only member of that team that didn't go into training. I was busy with the harvest. I had a letter from Dean Joe Bailey saying to me, take it easy for the rest of the week. You may be on Sunday. And when the team was selected, I was on Sunday playing at midfield with Eddie Dowling.
The game against Antrim had to be won twice by Kerry. After defeating them on the field of play, the county's honour then had to be defended. The first half failed to separate Kerry and Antrim.
Bill Casey held an Antrim free and Jackie Lyne was left in possession. He made ground before passing cleverly to Bill Brody O'Donnell, and a hard low punt beat Vernon Allins up for the opening goal inside 2 minutes.
When an Antrim forward was pulled down, McCorry pointed to the resultant free.
In a further northern rush, Dan O'Keefe saved the Kerry net, but Antrim came back at terrific speed and Gallagher drove over the bar. A solo run by Gibson along the wing was stopped by Walsh, but Armstrong sprinted in and secured. He was going through when pulled down.
From the free on the 21, McCorry drove over the bar for the equaliser.
Gibson, going along the wing, was stopped by Teddy O'Connor, but the Northmen were quickly on the attack again and O'Hara sent them a point in front. Bat Garvey from the wing sent in a great centre. Paddy Burke sprang high and held firmly. He was pulled down as he forced his way goalwards. Bill Brody O'Donnell's free went off the defender's hands to leave the scores level after 22 minutes. Gus Crimmin fielded high and drove into Antrim territory. O'Donnell beat Feeney for possession but was fouled. From an angle about 30 yards out, O'Donnell drove accurately between the uprights. Antrim came back to the attack and Armstrong was fouled. Watterson, from a good distance out, drove a great free between the sticks. Paddy Burke beat Hamill to the ball and flashed across to Jackie Lyne, whose low shot rattled the net, but the whistle had gone and the score was disallowed.
It was honours even at the break. Kerry won 2, Antrim 5 points. The second half was a pretty similar story.
Teddy O'Connor, playing a sparkling game, cleared, but Gibson got possession and sent up the white flag, giving Antrim the lead. A long kick by Joe Cahan was sent from Gus Crimmin to Jackie Lyne. He was fouled and Bill Brody O'Donnell levelled from the ensuing free. Jackie Lyne forced his way past two defenders, but the ball grazed the wrong side of the net. Antrim's kick out was short. Kerry swept down on the Antrim goal. Vernon and the ball were bundled into the net in a fierce charge. The referee gave a free out. Kennedy drove a long ball to the goal mouth. The leather went off Vernon's outstretched hands over the bar. Kerry were in front. Tom Gaga O'Connor swept past Gibson and Dan Kavanagh secured near the corner. His shot was dead on the net and the ball went over the bar off Vernon's hands. 1-5 to 6 points. Gus Crimmin sent to Jackie Lyne about 40 yards out. He was fouled and an angle free gave O'Donnell his opportunity. Straight and through, the ball travelled between the posts and Kerry were a clear goal ahead after 17 minutes. The Antrim backs, under severe pressure, fouled in front of the posts. From Bill Brody O'Donnell's free, up went the white flag. Soon after, O'Donnell drove into the net, but the score was disallowed. Antrim were hand-passing up the middle.
Bill Casey pulled down an opponent.
O'Neill ran in and hit Casey. Other players then joined in, but their comrades quickly pulled them apart. Casey and O'Neill were sent to the sideline.
Two frees put Antrim once more on the attack. McCorry pointed the second.
Then Antrim had a further free about 50 yards out. Watterson drove all the way for a minor, and Kerry's lead was reduced to a point with a few minutes to go. Burke got possession and bullocked his way goalwards. The Northern backs packed the goal, but Dan Kavanagh and Bat Garvey came up in support. Kerry cheers burst forth as Garvey punched past Vernon into the net in a goal-mouth tussle. Just before the whistle, Armstrong sent up the white flag.
Kerry won by just 3 points, 2-7 to 10 points. Recalling the game, Kerry supporter Liam Shanahan remembers well Antrim's style of play on the day. Shanahan was not impressed.
They brought in a new style of football, a running shot with the ball and another guy running onto it. Just like you're looking at now the Tyrone team. But it's the same thing all over again. They passed it all day long and the Kerry boys were mesmerised. They'd never seen this by any team in Ireland before. The GA and the authorities, they sought themselves, the people in charge, and they said, look, get rid of this. It will kill football. Football will just die like people wouldn't look at that rubbish at all. And it's happening now. It's happening now. It's back now.
The Kerry man quoted the Wexford Free Press viewpoint on Kerry versus Antrim.
Kerry deserved their win. Antrim have still to learn that the long kick is the basis of Gaelic football. The too frequent bouts of hand passing and toe and hand solo runs in which Antrim indulged played right into Kerry's hands. Kerry could have tried often for points and would have enjoyed a far bigger lead at the finish.
The forwards had saved the day.
Antrim owed much to their half-back line this season. Last Sunday it was beaten. Kennedy outfielded Watterson. Garvey showed great speed on one wing and O'Donnell great football craft on the other. The latter was the big success of the match. Antrim's full-backs were beaten by the greatest attacking line Kerry have fielded in years.
Antrim did not agree with that assessment, as 1970's book Years of Glory best describes.
Antrim objected to Kerry on the grounds of rough play and that Kerry's tactics on the occasion had brought the association into disrepute. In the course of the hearing of the objection by the Central Council, the referee said the game was over-vigorous towards the end and he had to award several frees to Antrim. Council Chairman Mr. D. O'Rourke appealed to Antrim not to proceed with the objection. Mr. McFerrin, Chairman of the Antrim Board, alleged that Kerry players had been sent out with a deliberate plan of action. John Joe Sheehy Kerry protested against the attack and said it was ridiculous to suggest that Kerry were bringing the association into disrepute. After more than 2 hours of debate, the objection was defeated by 19 votes to 10. Bill Casey and Harry O'Neill were each suspended for 2 months.
Roscommon, victors over Kerry at this stage 2 years previous, once again stood in the way of Kerry and All-Ireland title number 16. Roscommon had reached the decider by virtue of a 3-5 to 2-6 victory over Laois. Sometimes even Kerry football has to play second fiddle. This was the case in 1946. Kerry versus Roscommon was fixed to take place on September 22nd. The decider was put back to October 6th in order for that year's harvest to be gathered. The Second World War may have finished a year earlier, but its impact was still being felt. Kerry supporter Jerry Savage.
46 was a terrible year for the farmers because we had to grow our own wheat because bread was rationed. We had rationed books during the war and we had to begin in 47 and the wheat and barley and oats had to be saved plus the hay. And farm labourers were scarce because some of them had gone to England. The council allotted workers to the farmers to help save.
The Kerry man explained that many London and New York-based Kerry fans had made the trip to Dublin for the game, unaware it had actually been postponed. This unexpected turn of events led to Bill Casey, suspended following the semi-final, actually being available for the decider. Broadcaster Mihola Murahartic recalls how he discovered that Casey had been granted his reprieve.
I was in Colossheascon and I was on the way to Ballyvoudna and we had a wait between the Dingle bus landing in Tralee and the train to Cork and I went in to get a haircut. And while I was getting the haircut, the barber heard somebody came to the door and said the All-Ireland is postponed, Casey'll be playing. Now that's what I remember, that the term would be up. There was no case that time of missing the match. They had selected a team with a man called Charlie O'Connor in Casey's place at centre back. It didn't happen. Again, chance, the bad harvest. De Valera hadn't the good of Kerry in mind at all. The decision was taken with the harvest, you know. Civil servants were sent out to help the saving of the harvest. They got free time and the army buses brought them out from Dublin and Cork and everywhere. But the final was postponed. The schools remained closed. It was a unique year.
Tom Gig O'Connor was back in the Kerry team for the final, lining out a corner forward. Paddy Bawn Brosnan also returned. Gerald Tehan and Eddie Dowling lost out. It was hoped that the inclusion of Dan Kavanagh alongside Gus Cremin at midfield would have the desired effect for the Kingdom.
Roscommon probably expect to win, with an assumed superiority in midfield, Jimmy Murray on the 40, and the elusiveness of Fallon as full forward. Dowling and Cremin never hit up a happy partnership in the Kerry midfield. The change made here should strengthen the Kingdom. The recall of Keohane has temporarily solved the full-back difficulty. The value of his experience in a match like this cannot be overlooked. After putting on flesh, Keohane has reduced very much. He should have benefited by the delay. Kerry's front line is the best in the game. It spells the greatest danger to Roscommon. The return of Tom O'Connor has added punch to the attack.
The legendary Mick Finucane feels he would have been in contention for a starting spot, but for an injury sustained in a junior match.
Well, according to John Joshi, he anyway and some of them, I would have, well, that said that, because I was knocked out on it, but I'd been knocked out if you're playing with the seniors in that year. The final, which was coming up fairly close. But this fellow, his name Moriarty, that was playing, he was a guard up there playing with Leitrim. He came anyway, and I didn't see him coming in, and hit me most awful belt, and he dislocated my shoulder.
Interest in the game led to many being unable to gain access to Croke Park.
Half an hour before the match was due to commence, the gates were closed. Thousands were locked out. Loudspeakers enabled them to follow the broadcast.
Few All-Irelands have produced such dramatic conclusions as the 1946 final was to offer up. Roscommon were once more set to inflict defeat on Kerry in the decider.
6 minutes from the end, Kerry looked a well-beaten side. Right through the hour, they played second fiddle.
Even at half-time, it looked like curtains for the Kingdom.
From the throw-in, Roscommon moved in, and they had a free in front of the Kerry sticks. Keenan sent up the white flag inside a minute. Fallon got possession at an angle. He sent along the ground, the ball hitting the Kerry upright and going through for a soft goal. Dan O'Keefe, apparently thinking the ball was going wide, made no attempt to save. Kerry went to the attack and Jackie Lyne was fouled in possession. Gus Crimmins' kick reached Bat Garvey, who opens Kerry's scoring with a point. In a game of frequent fouls, Roscommon had a free. Fallon secured from this, but was fouled, and Keenan sent up another white flag. The Connacht men came clean through, and Kerry fouled about 30 yards out from their own post. The free hit the upright, and the ball came to Kinloch, who drove over a point. From a sideline kick, Kinloch missed, but made amends by scoring with a nice overhead kick in the next minute. A grand shot by Jackie Lyne from an angle hit the crossbar. After Lynch, who was a tower of strength in the Roscommon defence, sent back, Fallon got possession to add a minor.
Kerry registered a solitary point in the first half to Roscommon's 1-5. The Kingdom did better in the early stages of the second period, but the game still appeared to be beyond them.
Kerry had several changes when they resumed. Paddy Kennedy went to midfield, Dan Kavanagh left corner, and Tom Gaga O'Connor to the 40. Teddy O'Connor sent to Paddy Burke, who was pulled down close in. Tom Gaga O'Connor pointed the free. Paddy Kennedy sent back the kick and Jackie Lyne got possession. He passed cleverly to Paddy Burke, who sent over the bar. Another long kick by Paddy Kennedy reached the Roscommon ground. Burke sprang high and held well. He was going through when fouled. Tom Gaga O'Connor's free on the 21 mark went over the bar. Roscommon hit back. They came away with a kick and a hard shot by Murray was well saved by Dan O'Keefe on the line. When Roscommon had a free, Keenan's left leg again proved its worth by sending between the uprights. 1-6 to 4 points after 15 minutes play. From a further free, Keenan gave his side a 6 points lead.
That advantage looked an unassailable one. The game seemed beyond Kerry at this stage, but in sport, as in life, a moment is all it takes to change everything.
Following a hop, Kerry charged down the Roscommon post in a desperate onslaught. Paddy Kennedy headed the rush and passed to Paddy Burke close in. Burke was tackled at once, but he swerved past him and sent a low punt past Dolan into the net. For the first time in the hour, the game turned in Kerry's favour. A sideline kick by Teddy O'Connor about 30 yards out from the Roscommon goal was short-tipped to Tom Gaga O'Connor. The latter eluded a tackle and steadied himself. His diagonal ball went just over the heads of a cluster of players in the Roscommon square and passed under the bar, leaving the scores level with a few minutes to go.
Canon Jackie McKenna had drama of his own as regards the afternoon of that Kerry-Roscommon draw.
Our radio broke down, which was not an uncommon thing in those days. So what were we to do? The only thing was to down the stairs as quick as we couldn't go into one of the neighbours' houses, which is what we did before we went down, Kerry got one of those goals, and our reaction was that, oh, it isn't so bad now, they're only 3 points being beaten by us. You see, it's all right, they're not disgraced altogether. So we'd off down the stairs to go down and go into the neighbour's house. And while we were going down the stairs, we heard a big cheer coming from a house next door. God, I says, it couldn't be today. That it is not for the goal that they scored. We heard that one. It could never be this. So when we got into the other house, then they had scored the second goal.
Future Kerry player Tom Long also recalls the draw against Roscommon.
The radio was our only link with Kerry team at the time. Transport was only for adults, the little bit of transport that existed. The atmosphere was like that in a morgue. Entering the final stages, Kerry were 6 down by 6 points. Suddenly there was a burst, bang, a goal. And before the applause had died down, the second goal was scored.
Former Supreme Court Judge Hugh O'Flaherty was another keen listener to that drawn game.
With about three or four or five minutes to go, Kerry were 2 goals down. And I was in Killarney listening to it in my grandmother's house in Mangerton View. And I left in despair because I thought they were finished. And outside what was then Pat O'Mara's pub, people would gather outside in the street to listen to the radio, then the broadcast. And a big cheer went up. Kerry had got a goal. And I said, no good. And I trotted on as far as the Imperial Hotel when another big cheer went up. Kerry had got a second goal. It came that quickly. So I met Mihalo here in one stage. And I said, I don't want to intrude. I'm sure you're sick of people digging up things and so on. But I'm very curious about this. Can I ask you this? Did the goals come that quick? He said they did. Ball was in the net, kicked out, was put back into the net.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
Following a most unlikely ending, Kerry had snatched the draw 2-4 to Roscommon's 1-7.
A disappointing Kerry team were lucky to survive. Kerry were beaten everywhere for fully three quarters of the hour. Only a couple of backs stood between them and defeat. Roscommon proved themselves great fielders and strong kickers. They combined far better all through, and until the closing stages, when the players became undecidedly unsettled, were much the superior football machine. Roscommon were much too good for us in midfield. Kerry's changes hereabouts brought improvement late in the game. Johan was easily the pick of the backs, and his return to form saved Kerry from disaster. Of the half-forwards, O'Donnell showed a complete loss of form. Kennedy played a horse of a game all through. Kerry forwards never moved as a unit.
In advance of the replay, the Kerry man writes of a clear air training camp, adding that from the moment the players came onto the wing of Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan, rules and regulations were adhered to with ritualistic attentiveness. These days, inter-county players are wrapped up in cotton wool ahead of big games. However, a most unfortunate incident in the lead-up to the 46 replay shows injury can just as easily be sustained on the training pitch.
Trial games were held on Sunday and Monday. The weather on the first day was just vile. But on Monday, the selectors witnessed a good test, which left quite a few headaches. One of these was an injury to Eddie Dowling, who had a bone broken in his right leg in Monday's trial. Eddie was showing up well in practice and was freely being tipped for a place on the team.
Dowling had been one of those dropped for the drawn game, a most unfortunate end to his season. Gus Cremin and Bill Brody O'Donnell would also experience All-Ireland final heartbreak. Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan was in charge of the team for the replay, and both Cremin and O'Donnell were dropped. Cremin had captained Kerry in the drawn encounter and feels he was hard done by when it came to the side being selected for the replay.
I was captain for that game, and for the replay I was dropped. And I blame Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan for it. He wanted Paddy Kennedy captain. He wanted Paddy Kennedy captain of the team.
Kerry had a new midfield partnership for the replay. Teddy O'Connor was moved from right half-back and Paddy Kennedy taken from centre-forward. Tralee Pair, Jack Falvey and Frank O'Keefe were the new men for the replay, both in the forward division. Jackie Lyon was moved to half-back from the Van Kavanagh was switched from midfield to left corner forward. The replay took a vastly different path to the draw.
Roscommon, at lightning pace, were in Kerry ground. They had a free in front of the post and Keenan, with a fine left-legged drive, sent over the bar for the opening point inside 2 minutes. Paddy Kennedy sprang high and held safely. He was about to shoot when he was pulled down about 25 yards out. Tom Gaga O'Connor made no mistake with the ensuing free, and the sides were level after 4 minutes. Nerney crossed in front of the post where Roscommon had a free. From close range, Keenan sent his side a point ahead. Fallon rushed out and got possession from Boland's kick. He sent high between the uprights. Paddy Kennedy held the kick out. He was fouled. From the free, Tom Giga O'Connor got the ball. He passed cleverly to Bat Garvey, who sent up the white flag. Fallon rushed out and got possession unmarked. He missed a great chance. Then the Kerry goal had a narrow escape. Cohan's goal kick was charged down, but he drew on the ball, which landed well outfield. Roscommon had a free about 45 yards out, and Keenan's kick made the scores 4-2. Paddy Burke fielded a high ball close in. He was fouled. Tom Giga O'Connor's free was charged down, but the referee ordered the free to be retaken, and O'Connor's second attempt reduced Roscommon's lead to a point after 18 minutes. Kerry drove back the kick out, and Paddy Kennedy got the ball about 40 yards out. He sent straight and through between the uprights to leave the scores level at 4 points each after 20 minutes. From a placed ball, Keenan gave his side the lead in the 28th minute. Fallon added a further point to his team's tally.
The Kerry performance was vastly improved on the drawn encounter. Advantage Roscommon at the break, however, 6-4. On such a tense occasion, there were moments of light relief also.
Much amusement was created when a rabbit wearing the Roscommon colours was released in front of the stand. At the interval, a white cock, decked in green and gold, was left out in front of the Cusick stand.
When the sideshows were out of the way and the teams got back to the serious stuff, Kerry were the dominant force.
The Kerrymen kept up relentless pressure. Bat Garvey, flying along the wing, crossed a great ball. Tom Gig O'Connor rushed in and held it safely. He was fouled and, taking the free himself, sent up the white flag after 5 minutes. Kerry had another free. Bat Garvey got this. As he was going through, he was fouled. Giga O'Connor's free sailed just over the bar to leave the scores even after 8 minutes. Roscommon moved to the attack and Keenan sent in a terrific rasper. Dan O'Keefe saved well. Roscommon came in again and a Kerry back was whistled for overholding. Keenan from the free gave his side a point lead. And when McQuillan soon after sent up the white flag, Roscommon were 2 points in front.
An injury to Jack Falvey necessitated a change for Kerry. Gus Cremin, it was who replaced him, eventually, and with a little help from selector Joe Barrett.
Joe Barrett thought to myself, couldn't understand how I was off the team. He was shoving me onto the team at least 6 times before I went on. Dr. Hammond didn't want me on the team.
Cremin went to midfield when he came on. Teddy O'Connor moved to the wing.
After Roscommon had sent wide, Kerry broke away. Bat Garvey sprinted along the wing and passed to Tom Giga O'Connor. He short passed to Paddy Burke. Burke rounded Casserly and crashed past Dolan to the net. 1-6-8. Kerry won in front after 17 minutes for the first time. A further free to Roscommon, which Keenan pointed, and the scores were even after 21 minutes. Roscommon again attacked, and Dan O'Keefe brought off a great save from Kinloch. Bill Casey was outstanding in stopping many Roscommon rushes up the centre. Kerry got 2 frees in succession. Bat Garvey got the second and sent over the bar, putting Kerry in front with 8 minutes to go. Roscommon had a free at 40 yards range. Keenan pointed, and the teams were level with 5 minutes left.
The game-turning score was soon to arrive.
Kerry had a free about 55 yards out. Gus Crimmin's kick was driven back by Carlos, but Crimmin got the return. He steadied himself just inside the 50, and a long punt went sailing between the posts, giving Kerry the lead.
The scorer himself remembers his strike well.
A free outside in the middle field, and I dropped it in between the 14 and 21, and Carlos went up for it and brought it down and kicked it out the field, and I got the return. I could see Connor waving me to Kiki team, and I could see the goals opening out as I thought. I went for my pint and scored it. I often scored them in the North Kerry League, the same distance. The paper the following day said that I had the last laugh with them.
Lost time was being played as Kerry drove home their advantage. In face of a whirlwind rush, the Roscommon backs fouled. The kick was followed by another free to Kerry at the corner. Tom Giga O'Connor took this. He sent the ball just under the bar. Dolan, the Roscommon goalman, sprang high and clutched the leather firmly. Even as he did, the Kerry forwards rushed him and sent ball and goalman to the back of the net. There was a brief consultation between the umpires and referees, and when the green flag was hoisted, there was a wild Kerry roar.
That goal sealed the victory. 2-8 to 10 points. The display of the previously suspended Bill Casey was touted as the match-winning performance.
The Kerry halves were miles in front of their old form. It is the best tribute to their play that their opponents switched repeatedly and in vain. Star of the line was Casey. He overshadowed Murray, and this was Kerry's trump card. O'Connor was set a tough job on the 40, where Carlos operates. O'Connor's play hereabouts was decisive in winning the match for Kerry. Roscommon had the balance at midfield when E. O'Connor went to the wing in the second. second half and Crimmins came out at the centre, Kerry were able to hold their own, but no more than that. Paddy Kennedy's promotion to the captaincy seemed to inspire him to great efforts. Never in his long football career has he given greater service. Kerry may have sent out great football machines, but for grit and gameness, the 1946 champions will rank with the best.
Kerry mascot that day was the son of the Kerry goalkeeper Dan O'Keefe. How appropriate given that O'Keefe Sr. was winning an unprecedented 7th All-Ireland medal. Winning his first that afternoon was Frank O'Keefe, whose son Jono would bring many more medals to the family in the 1970s and 80s. That 1946 victory once more pushed Kerry out in front in terms of All-Ireland Championship victories, 16 to Dublin's 15. Two men feeling aggrieved, however, following the success were Gus Cremin and Mick Finucane. Following his omission from the starting 15, which robbed him of the captaincy, Cremin bypassed the homecoming.
Came home on my own. I was disappointed over losing the captainship, and my sister-in-law, Mr. Red, died that year. I was in no form for celebrations.
Finucane felt he was done out of a medal in the wake of the victory.
Eddie broke his leg in training. But Eddie deserved the medal because he had played with him all along, does he? Well, I think I deserved the two because I was in the panel. I showed you the programme there and named the man that got the medal, who shall be nameless, like the fella said, who wasn't on the programme. Michal O'Rourke wrote to me to tell me that I had lost an All-Ireland medal and the toss of a penny with this player. And I wrote back saying that I was very disappointed. They lost a medal and a gamble at which I wasn't present. That kind of hurt some people at headquarters because they never invited me after any of the functions that Kerry had, like, for a while anyway. And I had to play myself back into him again.
The month it was October I and 46th year when Kerry and Roscommon clashed to make the verdict clear. Roscommon's captain bragged before that glorious game began, "For today we'll beat the kingdom sweet at horse or hound or man." Then out stepped Pat Bon Brosnan from Dingle's beauty side. "I fought," said he, "on many a sea, on many a raging tide, and by the Blasket's foaming flank my fishing smack I ran, for none can beat the kingdom sweet at horse or hound or man. I pledge you men remember then the lovely hills of home, the mountains brown or Dingle town, Valentia in the foam, the silvery feel and sweet Tralee, Killarney's heavenly plan, for none can beat the kingdom sweet at horse or hound or man. Roscommon's fields, they may be sweet and soft the sheeplands there, but better far the southerners are, reared out on mountain air. And though our foes be sterling men and strive as heroes can, there's none can beat the kingdom sweet at horse or hound or man. I pledge you Dano in the gap with Joe Keohane before, Pat Bawn the lines and Casey Brave who led to every score, Ted Connor and Pat Kennedy, Ned Walsh to lead the van, for none can beat the kingdom sweet at horse or hound or man. The forwards too I name them, with Gaga in the lead, Bat Garvey and Dan Kavanagh, with Falvey and O'Keefe, and lovely dark-haired Paddy Burke who thrilled each partisan, for none can beat the kingdom sweet at horse or hound or man. I pledge you now Gus Crimmins tall, that light Lazelton lad, who fleet as deer had gripped the sphere and drove all Ireland mad, who scored the final flaming point and smashed Roscommon's plan, for none can beat the kingdom sweet at horse or hound or man.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
From Tralee to the Blaskets, from Lixnaw to Kilgarvan, your voice in the kingdom, Radio Kerry.